Well, Chris, I am on record as saying that we need to put more money into the Social Security Trust Fund. That's part of my commitment to raise taxes on the wealthy. My Social Security payroll contribution will go up, as will Donald's, assuming he can't figure out how to get out of it. But what we want to do is to replenish the Social Security Trust Fund by making sure that we have sufficient resources. And that will come from either raising the cap and or finding other ways to get more money into it. I will not cut benefits. I want to enhance benefits for low-income workers and for women who have been disadvantaged by the current Social Security system.
You know, I gotta be honest. That woman, that nasty woman, she should have been president. I look at this disgrace that we've got right now and wow. Wow, wow, wow. Anyway, last night, the Statue of Liberty. Lady Liberty went on strike last night in recognition of International Women's Day. Right around 10 p.m., shut it down. For about 2 hours, Lady Liberty shut it down. Now, the Park Service, they jumped in, claimed it was due to some ongoing work, emergency, generator, backup, whatever, that they're doing for Liberty Island. Something about a timer must have going off or set for the wrong time. And I'm going, you know, still can't give the woman credit, can you? Evidently not. Anyway, today is International Women's Day and the big strike going on all across the country. That's why I've asked Helene Olin to come talk with us. She's a journalist, also the author of Pound Foolish and The Index Card, which coming out, I guess, in paperback today. Helene, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you. I feel like I should be striking, but I'm here.
Yes.
So here we are.
My wife said the same thing. You know, no dinner for you tonight.
My dog is asleep. She's female. She counts.
There you go. But here's the thing. You know, I look at this, and again, last night, Lady Liberty, kind of one of those symbolic messaging things.
I thought that was wonderful, by the way. I thought that was truly wonderful. And if it happens again tonight, I will be convinced somebody is helping women out somewhere.
Now, all across the country, you've got these, you know, these protests, these people out in the streets. What's the point for people who don't know?
The point is to show the value of women's contributions to society and of course, how women are being damaged by the rulings and attempts at legislation by the new Trump administration.
But, you know, it's just not Trump. I mean, this isn't new stuff, people would say. I mean, Trump's just the, you know, just the poster child for all of the negative and all the nasty things that have gone on. But this is, you know, this is institutional. This is systematic, right?
Right. I mean, you know, I always say, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I write a lot about personal finance. And whenever people come to me, you know, there's always this whole thing with women and money, right? Like, women don't know how to manage their money. Women don't find money emotional. They're frightened by it, blah, blah, blah. And I always point out the basic things you need to know about money and women are that women earn less, have more checkered careers, and live longer, which means, of course, that they have less money.
Right.
And that this is discrimination. And people always look at me when I say this like I've sort of dropped a turd in the room. Like, you're not supposed to acknowledge that women getting paid less for the same work that men do, or that women teachers being undervalued compared to men who, you know, don't have college degrees, is discrimination. But in fact, it is discrimination. There's no other word for it. And this is a point I'm constantly, constantly trying to make.
No, but the thing is, and I push back on some of it, and I go, look, if everyone had a union contract where it's all laid out in black and white, maybe that stuff goes away.
Yeah, but teachers have union contracts, and they still, I mean, they certainly, you know, don't starve. But on the other hand, you know, they arguably don't earn what people with degrees who are not teachers actually earn, which is an issue as well. I mean, it's something like a 30% discrepancy.
But isn't that the argument between public sector and private sector, or do you see that in the discrepancy even in the public sector work?
Well, the discrepancy is even in public sector work. I mean, it's hard to sort of go overall because it varies so much by where you are. But, you know, it's You know, and certainly, you know, police and firemen are very valuable, too. But, you know, in many cases, teachers are not earning what they are. And you have to start asking questions about that. I mean, we want to be protected, but protection is also the education of our children, who will, of course, protect our society and keep us prosperous. We don't want an undereducated workforce, right? And these are real questions. You know, women's labor is systemically undervalued. This is why, you know, you could do sort of joke surveys every year, and, you know, the price of a mom's services, and depending on who's counting it, it comes in around $150,000, $125,000 a year, right? You know, nobody could pay for what a mom does. And, you know, similarly, you see on the other end, and this is an important point with some of the stuff that's going on in healthcare reform yet again, is that when women are much more likely to have to take on the challenges of elderly relatives, you know, somebody has to take care of them. And in fact, what we know is that women will suffer substantial losses for doing that, much more so than men. Women will suffer about over $300,000 in lifetime earnings hit if they have to take care of an elderly relative, which many do, whereas men won't. It's around $100,000, $150,000. I don't have the number off the top of my head, so that's a huge discrepancy too.
Yeah. So what's the answer to this? I mean, because I've got two daughters. I don't want them to walk into the world that, you know, maybe my mother or my grandmother lived in. I want them to have equal opportunities. I want them to be able to go as far as their talents will take them. What's the answer? Is this a policy thing? Is this a societal thing? Where do you see the changes beginning?
All of the above. I mean, it's not like you could legislate all of this from the top down, though, for the record, you know, enforcing, you know, pay equity laws would definitively help, right? Or having them for that matter, right? That would really be helpful. Pay transparency is really, really helpful, right? Enforcing this stuff is really helpful. But on the other hand, it also has to come from the bottom up. I think there's still this idea out there that women's income is incidental to the household. And that's really not true. You know, first of all, about 40% of households, women are the primary earners, wage earners. But secondarily, of course, it's that the idea of that itself is kind of offensive, right? Like, you know, there's this sort of background assumption that if the woman is earning, you know, the primary earner, there's something wrong. And I think that is something that is widely shared. And I think you see that even, you know, in fairly upper income settings. And that's something that needs to be addressed as well.
Better get over that fairly quick, because I don't know if you've noticed, but I've gone into a number of college campuses. There are more women on college campuses than there are men.
Right, but they still don't earn as much when they graduate. That's the thing, right? So we have this thing now where women are doing real well in the education system, and then they hit the real world, and the guys are still doing better. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's still not really a system that's totally working. And in fact, in the big money areas, and I'm talking Wall Street, Silicon Valley, the film industry, these are some of the worst places for women, frankly. The ratios are horrendous. The pay discrepancies are horrendous. I believe the finance sector is actually considered the worst.
Yeah, I can see that. But, you know, is it not, you know, reasonable to assume that, you know, as women continue to grow in numbers and they continue to organize, that at some point, since they're the majority in the country, since they're going to take over the workforce at some point in the near future, don't you think that somehow they would organize and have the ability to say no more?
You would hope so. But the second issue comes, and this is something that was really sort of ended up being highlighted in the most recent campaign, is there's this sort of default idea that women all have the same interests, that if you are a female, you are X or Y, right? You believe this or you believe that. And in fact, when you talk to people who are market researchers or do pollsters, they'll tell you really quickly it's almost impossible to have an interest group that's 50% of the population. It's simply it really can't happen. People start having diverse interests. So women will frankly, you know, vote what they perceive to be their economic interests. Now understand, their economic interests might well be tied to the men in their lives. And this is an issue as well. So it's a lot harder a thing to simply, you know, break down and say, oh, this will definitively happen. But part of it is, again, is that we don't even have the backup for it. There is very little, you know, in the way, as we all know, in the United States, we famously don't have paid leave for, you know, for giving birth. We, you know, we have all sorts of things that just count against women.
Right.
And you would think that these would be things that all would organize around. And in fact, there's majority support for a lot of them. On the other hand, we have an administration right now that's very hostile to a lot of this. In fact, the Trump administration, what seems to be coalescing as their plan for what you or I would call family leave, is very much based around a woman giving birth to children and actually is very sex specific. So again, that really doesn't help with the bigger situation.
So when he did his little almost presidential moment with the not State of the Union, State of the Union, Joint Congress, whatever it was, speech, and he threw some, you know, a couple of words at the idea of paid leave, you're saying it's not that at all then?
Right, because first of all, you know, men take care of children too, right? Though men do take shorter leaves than women, the evidence shows that when they do take leaves, they remain more involved in their children's lives, right? So this is an important point. Second, of course, there are other reasons to take family leave than children, as the elder care example I used earlier.
Right.
I have parents. My children are teenagers. You know, that's a very valuable thing. It would be a very valuable thing for my husband as well. And this is something that needs to be discussed, too, especially as the population is aging. People need help on that end, too. And in fact, what's going on? Instead, the healthcare proposals that are out from the Republicans in Congress this week are cutting Medicaid substantially. Medicaid is actually one of the bulwarks of taking care of elderly in our country. So who is this going to throw the burden on? Probably women.
So today we've got people out in the streets, and look, I'm all in favor of taking to the streets. I'm all in favor of shutting things down to get our point across. What are we expecting?
I don't know what we're expecting, actually. That's a really good question. You know, we've definitely seen situations where certain school districts have had to shut down. Alexandria in Virginia is one of them. A local private school near me is another one. They shut down their elementary school today, the Fieldston School. On the other hand, a lot of women are probably going to be wearing red. I saw a lot of that when I was walking my dog this morning.
I'm wearing red.
And I am too. And, but on the other hand, how much of a difference is it going to make? You know, I think we have this thing in our society right now where we want this sort of instantaneous reaction of, oh, this is going to make X difference, and this is going to make this difference, and this is going to happen as a result of that. And it takes time. I mean, you know, we really need to see how things play out, and it's all part of the opposition to what's going on with the current administration, and I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah, I think so as well. And but for me, it's you know, I don't expect any big changes out of today's organizing, but it's that first step towards getting people to look to their right and to their left and go, hey, I know you, or hey, I'd like to know you, and hey, we should do something and begin that ball, that snowball of opposition, of organizing, of demanding change.
Right. I mean, I've always said that was the great success of Occupy Wall Street, which people always say is, you know, is regarded mostly as a failure right now. And I actually never felt that way at all, because,
no,
in fact, what Occupy Wall Street did, and I said this in Pound Foolish, is I said it was the first mass movement that basically got people to say, hey, you're underwater on your mortgage, you have unpayable medical bills, you're over your head in student debt. We all have the same problem, right? And that was a gigantic thing. And it really made that issue stand out in the country. And it took the issue of income inequality and wealth inequality, which really had been something that was simply talked about by, you know, finance writers and wonks for 30 years, into the public discourse, right? I mean, these things can have tremendous impact. It's just not an impact you might see this afternoon or tomorrow morning.
No, and really, I think it changed a generation,
right.
And we'll see that in the coming years. Before I let you go, I understand today's the big day. You're re-releasing the index card in paperback form?
Yes, it actually was yesterday. I think I gave you the wrong information, so the fault is on me. It was yesterday. It is the index card. Why Personal Finance Doesn't Have to Be So Complicated. I co-wrote it with Harold Pollack at University of Chicago. It's based on his famous index card of very simple tips for personal finance. And it's sort of a guide to clearing out the clutter in your financial life and not letting yourself get hosed by the financial services industry, which, as we all know, many financial advisors pretend to be your friend when they're not. And this is, again, something I like to rant about with the current administration. The regulations were about to change on that, at least as far as retirement accounts go, where financial advisors would have to act in the best interests of their clients. Only some do right now, and it's almost impossible for the average person to figure out who's who on that. And the Trump administration just put a hold on that proposal, and we don't really know what's going on with that. So if I have any parting advice for you right now, it's if you seek financial advice, make sure the person is a fiduciary, which means somebody who has a duty to act in your best interest.
There you go. The index card, we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com of how you can pick it up. So the good thing is it was released yesterday. That means you'll have access to it today. Helene, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Oh, thank you, and any time.
Great talking with you. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.